Hey everyone, welcome to Tour Punisher, the podcast about being punished on tour. I'm Noah Dunham.
I'm Ryan Soley.
And I'm Ray Rude. Today we have a pretty awesome show. We have a really funny comedian on the show, Mr. Alex Falcone, Portland's funniest person last year. I think this one was really good. It was a little bit different speaking with a comedian instead of a musician, but we get a little bit of insight into how touring is different for one or the other. Let's just get right into it. This is Alex Falcone, and you are listening to Tour Punisher.
And you look healthy.
I do, yeah. I do. It's all
it's all part of the facade.
Just lentils, very cheap.
Nice.
Well done. Do you soak them or canned lentils or a mixture of both?
The Trader Joe's bagged lentils, which is cheating, but they're very good. Oh. I was trying to think of a better joke than lentils, but now I'm stuck talking about fucking lentils. Good job, me.
Yeah.
That just proves that you're older than 20. No, I don't know.
Hey,
yeah, lentils are like they're upgraded black beans, I think, right?
It's upgraded?
Like, yeah, like in college.
Take that, and other cultures.
Oh my god.
No, I meant they're like more fancy. Like they're still a really cheap protein.
Yeah, yeah.
But like if you tell somebody, hey, I'm cooking lentils, it's maybe a little better than like, hey, I'm cooking a bunch of beans.
I just
wish I hadn't said lentils in that riff and be stuck in it for this whole time.
I'm gonna write down lentils. We might come back to it.
Hey, real quick, Noah.
Yeah, put a pin in lentils. Yeah,
what else about lentils?
I do have a question though, which is I agreed to this a while ago, forgot what it's about.
Yeah.
Is this just a food and Dan Savage based
podcast?
Well,
we do. It's funny. We're already starting to hit some points that just we naturally do. So we're already talking about food, which is great.
Okay.
But
that's on your list?
That's not necessarily on the list. It just for some reason ends up happening.
Mm-hmm. Every fucking time.
Well, but eating and shitting is such a huge part of being on tour. So.
Yes.
And being a person.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So we try to cover all those things, being a person. Shitting.
Oh, it's about being on tour?
Yeah.
On tour. Oh, awesome.
Yeah. So that's funny. I was about to tell you, A, you know, generally we don't have a start to this thing. We all kind of getting to know each other. And then B, you know, did you have any questions? This is Welcome to Tour Punisher, the show about being punished on tour.
It's got a sticker.
Yeah, it does have a little sticker right there. That's your gift.
Oh, that's for me.
Yeah,
thank you.
Can have
hey,
that.
Dude, we only have fucking 10 of those. We didn't say we're going to give him one.
I thought that was the point. Well, you're going to have to earn that sticker.
All right.
We'll see how it goes.
60 cents a piece.
Put it in the
this
middle
is merch. You buy this.
But yeah, so we're...
Look where we are. Come on.
Yeah. Actually, this is the cutest podcast studio I've been in. I like it a lot.
Isn't it cool? Yeah.
I love this trailer. I like that there was a lot of options of bubbly water. Yeah, it's nice.
Yeah. So yeah, it's a show. So far we've done one season and we've not toured. It would be cool to tour. That would be so meta of us. But we've interviewed up to this point all musicians that tour. So band stories, packing people into a van, going across country.
I mean, they said they were musicians.
Shade coming from Ryan.
Yeah.
And so this season we were really excited to try to branch out, and so you're our first comedian. You're the first branch of the branching out into other forms.
I like that. I'm glad I agreed to this. Sometimes here's the thing about being a comic is I agree to every podcast anyone's ever asked me to do, and 80% I regret it. So,
well, the only other part of it that we didn't tell you about is that it's half about touring, and then the other half is we're all going to select each other characters, and we'll do about an hour and a half of radio improv.
I would do that. That doesn't sound the worst.
Okay.
Somebody pick something out of the air. What is it? Sparkling water. Go.
Also, you know what? Podcast, the worst podcast I've agreed to.
Please. Oh, this is great.
Yeah,
this is...
Well, yes and no. So I guess I didn't entirely agree to this, but I agreed to
it. The name of it first. Sorry.
There's a podcast in Portland run by a dentist. And I agreed to it when it was him and a comic interview a comic. And it was basically like, we're going to talk about comedy. I'm a dentist, but I wish I was a comic, so this is my way of getting in.
Yes.
And I agreed to that. That sounded okay. Because it paid, which most podcasts don't. Should have been a warning.
That's a bad sign, yeah.
Yeah. But then the day before, he's like, by the way, we've switched up the format. Oh, no. Now what we do is I give you laughing gas and do a quiz show.
Oh, my God.
Oh, what?
That is a hard pivot.
Did you do it?
No. No. He did say, in parentheses, he was like, safe and legal, and it is neither of those.
I thought you said you bet you do every podcast.
Yeah. I was like, no, I did the show, but I did not do that part. I refused to be part of it.
That and seems like an invitation.
Or you did do that part and you forgot.
No, I don't know. I mean, I don't even drink. Like, the idea, it's like, I'm going to start doing nitrous for podcasts. Like, it was a weird leap.
Yeah. I wonder if it's
that's
like.
That's a hard ask, yeah.
It's like, I wonder if he was like, looked you up and saw that you did Spicy News, right?
Done a couple times, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So for our listeners who don't know what that is, it's comedians who eat a really spicy peppers,
a
right?
Habanero,
or chilies. Yeah, yeah. And then they try to give you the headlines. And it's jokes you guys write yourselves, right?
The show writes the jokes. That's important.
Yeah.
You're allowed to go to the meeting, and I did not. So I was reading their jokes, and yeah, they just give you a habanero, and then you try to be funny, like a topical podcast, or topical, like a Tonight Show style.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it is the worst.
Yeah, it looks terrible, it sounds terrible, it's usually pretty funny, but
if
I wonder,
you like watching somebody's, like, snot pour out of their face while they're crying, and then also delivering amateur monologue jokes, it's a weird vibe.
It's your niche, yeah.
That's your thing.
Yeah, I wonder if this dentist Googled you, saw that you did that a couple times, was like, oh, he's into gimmick comedy, let's get the nitrous out.
I mean, the only reason I wish I had done it, because I would like to be part of someone losing their license for something. That's kind of a cool story.
any field, really.
Yeah, whatever. If I could be part of you losing your professional license for your career,
and it's recorded for perpetuity.
For posterity, there was a videographer there. They had two cameras. They were like, we are going to capture this guy getting disbarred.
I know some doctors on Craigslist I could totally hook you up with. Really easy. I know. Great.
The dentist claimed that he'd emailed the FDA, and they said, this is what they said. They said, you can do this. You're not allowed to do it for fun, but if you're doing a procedure,
Jesus,
you're allowed to have fun. So he was going to come up with a fake dental procedure to do. He'd be like, I'm going to do, you know, it's a classic, you know, we got to do a molar scrub. And then he'd be in there. So he had to be working on you the whole time. So there's a quiz guy giving you questions. You're fucked up on nitrous.
You've hit the nos.
And you take a hit of nos. And then he is working on your mouth.
God.
And that is either the best idea for a podcast ever or the worst. And I do not know which.
My question is, what is the name of this podcast? You already fucking described
it.
Oh,
yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. It's called Gassed. Or at least it was when I first talked to him, and I was like, you do know.
The podcast.
The first thing people think of when you say Gassed is not what a fun time.
It's the.
If you call it It's a Gas, now I get it. Now it's a joke. Yeah. That's a fun time. This you sound like you're murdering people.
Yeah. Sounds like.
This is a murder podcast. This isn't the booth. We call this the chamber. It's a terrible idea.
Oh my God. And I guess the other question is, have any comedians actually gone through with it, or anyone else for that matter?
Well, I haven't subscribed, so I can't tell you how the show is doing.
I want to know how many.
It might still be happening. Well, actually, he did say, when I said no to him, he's like, you're the first person who's said no. Everybody else was super excited about it. So,
wow.
If you're into drugs, maybe it's fun to do nitrous in a somewhat controlled environment.
I don't know about talking and trying to do, like, answer questions while somebody has sharp tools in my mouth.
Yeah, that is also weird.
That is also
I mean,
hard.
It's the standard dentist thing, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But also, the thing about nitrous that is dangerous is that you suffocate, and I just feel like if I'm also out of breath from telling a story, it just feels worse. It just feels worse.
So,
I don't like it.
I'm a bit of a freak about my teeth. Like, I floss and I'm very...
What a freak. Oh, get out of here. That's disgusting.
No, you should see the kind of floss I have, man. It is... Woo!
I'm jerking off while I do it. Does that count? Is that weird?
Yes. No, it's not. I like how, like... anyway, whatever. I was recently at the dentist, and I bought a Groupon for the dentist, and the dentist I went to is called Grin and Barrett.
Oh, my God.
And with a B-E-A-R. And I went in, and there was a fucking bear motif. There was, like, bears everywhere. And I was like, what the fuck is this?
I'll tell you what it is. That is a Craigslist dentist.
That is a Craigslist dentist.
That is a Groupon-style dentist.
Right, that's exactly right. But I, like, you know, have my mouth open, and they're examining my mouth. And the lady's like, I just really marvel at your home care. I was like, and then she's like,
This is what I do it for. Keep talking to me.
She's like, hey, Susie, come in here. I want you to see this home care.
No kidding.
And I had my mouth open, and like three people at once are like looking at, and they're like, wow, look at that. Look at that mouth. Look at that home care. And I was like, now it got weird. No, not when like there's one person home care.
When you're a blog post for the dental magazine.
Yeah, it got a little intense.
Get a pic for Instagram.
Have this home care. Yeah. Look at this fucking home care.
What's the
This is what preventative care looks like.
What's the Grin and Bear It podcast? Is that where they just have you get mauled by a bear?
And you just have,
you have to review movies or something?
No, they give you a list of jokes to read while you're getting mauled by a bear.
I mean, this is definitely, it feels like the way comedy is going right now, because like drunk history.
Totally. Just get kicked in the balls and then you have to like talk.
Yeah. Yeah. There's like 200 shows where you get, you do a bunch of edibles in between the sets. It's like, we're like 2 weeks away from something like, this is the show where you do heroin and then you tell some jokes.
It's weird that you'd bring that up because we've changed our format without telling you.
Yeah, we're gonna kill you and then bring you back
with heroin. And you'll be a heroin zombie and we're gonna interview you.
It's the same thing with the habaneros too. It's like, it's just people don't want to watch you do comedy. But if you are sad,
if you're in pain,
as if being a fucking comedian, already the fucking saddest thing you could imagine. And how else is it sad?
Well, it could be worse. I could be a musician.
Whoa! Oh, wow, we're getting into it already. Yeah. Well, I don't know when Ray is going to do any kind of cutting or anything like this during the editing process.
Oh, I thought you meant like just cutting his arm right now.
Well, yeah, that's part of that's our new gimmick is we interview people and Ray sits in the corner and cuts himself.
It's a sad show.
Sweet.
Too dark.
I don't like the show.
A little dark.
I don't like it anymore.
Little sad.
He doesn't feel anything because of the nitrous, but he does the cutting.
But I was going to say... you know, we haven't formally welcomed or introduced him yet, but Alex Falcone is on the show, a very talented comedian based here on the West Coast. Are you still based in Portland?
I'm still based in Portland.
For the time being, you're thinking about making the LA move,
yes,
I hear.
Yes, always.
Yeah, always. Every comedian with some kind of talent
from day one
in Portland, right?
I started saying last year that I was going to move during the summer, and I didn't, so it feels weird to say it now, but at some point we'll probably move.
Yeah. Is that okay? So just getting into that a little bit, is the goal like you feel like you've hit the ceiling in Portland and you need some more access?
Yeah. I mean, TV lives there. There's one city in the world that has 95% of this industry, so you kind of have to be there at some point.
Yeah,
there's like 7 writing jobs in New York, and the rest of them are not.
Yeah,
and I'd like to write for TV at some point, so that's ambition wise.
That's the goal ultimately, is to write for TV.
I feel like you don't get there are not as many comics who are super successful in touring out of their hometowns as there are bands. Everybody eventually has to migrate to LA.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I guess maybe like the way country musicians move to Nashville, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But you guys don't have to move to LA for your band to work. That probably doesn't help that much, right?
Right. I would say that it helps to be... In a way, it helps because the people are there, but there's so much competition. It actually is better to be hot shit in a city that isn't a huge city, but it's like a medium-sized city.
Yeah.
If you can be the thing there.
But if you're going to live out of a bus anyway,
right,
you might as well pay rent in Portland.
Exactly.
Whereas as comics, even when you tour, it's like you go to, you fly here and you fly. It's mostly fly dates, and you fly for 3 days and come back.
Right.
Yeah, for sure.
We don't do a lot of bus touring.
Right. You do or you don't.
You don't. There's not a lot of comics doing bus tours.
Well, I think the East Coast... from what I've heard, East Coast, there's a lot more driving around to do shows, and the West Coast is so spread out, the markets, it's like, doesn't
not much you
can
do.
Nope.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
And even then, they drive down and back. You don't usually, like, people every once in a while will get in their car and be like, I'm going to do 6 weeks on the road, but not very often.
Hmm.
It's not that useful. And there's, like, you do comedy at home, and there's plenty of stuff to do here. I can get up 7 times this week. Probably it's harder to do, like, 7 shows with your band this week
town.
That would be a weird week.
It's, for a band, it's like, if you reach a certain level, like, when you're starting out and trying to get yourself established, you play once every 6 weeks. That's a lot. And then now you play like twice a year.
Oh, man.
You can't play in Portland.
You don't want to oversaturate.
Yeah.
Because to get everybody to come out, you're 300 or 400, 500 fans.
Yeah.
To get them to come out, it's like more than twice a year. They're like, I'm good.
I mean, I did probably 6 shows in Portland this week, but zero fans came. So I'm not even diluting a draw. There's no fans. There's no reason to worry about that.
All right. Well, here's a nerdy comedy question then. What, from those six shows that you probably did in this last week, what was the, like, worst one? Like, what did you feel like was the worst one?
I mean, worst is a weird question, too, because I... Like, the least fun was Friday night. I did a 45 minutes of clean jokes for the for a groundwater association. but that was also the most I got paid this week. So, it's, like, not fun, but it was also great.
Yeah.
That was the best show that felt the worst. Does that...
Yeah. Sure, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
That's exactly what
I
you
paid
go through.
My rent.
You go through with a band, it's like you have to do... You get asked to do something by Red Bull, and you can't turn it down. Mm-hmm. And that pays for your Europe trip, or that pays for your album, or
for sure.
That pays for everything.
But I would Ilya, what are the Red Bull show? What's that show like? Is it like is it the same as a corporate show? How does it feel?
It feels like the one we did. It felt like a cross between a show and professional wrestling. So it felt worse in some ways than a corporate show, but it was kind of fun if you could just stop being such an idiot in your mind and just make it dumb. Like, this is just dumb. Let's just have fun and be idiots.
Yeah, I feel like if I had done a better... I could have done a better job of that. I've been like, this is stupid. I'm just going to have fun being stupid. Because, like, the problem with me is just, like, looking at 150 well drillers in their eyes and be like, look, I know this isn't what you wanted.
Right.
So where in the night were you in that for that show?
I was it. They spent a day doing... education about drilling procedures and learning about new adhesives, and then towards the end of the day they were like, and now dinner and entertainment.
Hilarious.
And so I did an hour for them, and then they got up and did it again the next day and went for a bunch more educational thing. I'm the only thing fun.
So how does a gig like that come to you?
This one was recommended. Another comedian was supposed to do it, and she backed out on short notice, so I got more money than I normally would
because
it was booked short. But just people recommend you. I don't know. They like Google people.
Yeah.
So, and there are some like super dumb like gig masters. Have you seen?
No.
Do you know what these are?
No.
But they're like, it's mostly like clowns and stuff. But you're like, I need a comedian for 40 minutes, Christian, clean, search, whatever, you know, and then you get
It's like a database?
And
you can just...
You just sign up as a business, you list it, you list your prices or whatever, and then you get... So there's, like, terrible stuff like that, but this is just other person's gonna do it.
Is it hard being a clean Christian comedian? I would think if I was Christian, I would just be swearing. I'd be a dirty Christian comedian.
There's not a lot of market for that.
Jesus fucking Christ.
But if I was a Christian comedian, which I'm not, lucrative business.
Oh, I'm sure.
It would be effective.
Any Christian bands, holy shit. Yeah. If you can get it, literally holy shit, if you can get in there.
Because they're not allowed to have fun, so like they're like, wait, there's a comedy show for us? I will pay all of my money.
So growing up non-religious whatsoever, the first time I was like 19 with my punk band, we're doing a show at this place, and there was a fucking band back there praying right before they went on stage. And I was literally like, what in the fuck is this?
Yeah.
And then I realized there's this whole scene of Christian bands that are doing this thing. Yeah. And it was like...
Like the Newsboys? Is that one?
Totally.
Or is that what I'm talking about?
POD or any of that shit.
POD? Yeah, I've heard of POD.
Where they're like, they're doing this punk rock medium, which is supposed to be against anything that's what they're doing. And then they're co-opting it and making it so like they're the punks and the rest of the world is the fucking
shitty. That's almost the most punk thing you could do.
It is. If you like...
I don't care about your punk orthodoxy.
Right.
The punkest thing is to be a super Christian band.
Fuck yeah, it is.
Also, it'd be so much... It's so much easier if you're like, I can just do a ripoff of what anyone else is doing, but without the swears, so that these people are allowed to enjoy it.
And make sure that it's exactly 8 years after the thing that is actually happening now is happening. You've got it nailed.
Well, there is actually... So one of the good ways to make money as a comic right now is there is a Mormon-run organization called Dry Bar Comedy that is a comedy club in Provo, Utah that does not have any drinking, hence Dry Bar. But they also produce specials for people, and they pay you way more than you deserve if you do clean shows. And you don't have to be religious, but you just do clean sets because their constituents, their people, their flock are so desperate for comedy because the comedy world, the entertainment world does not care about them. And the same with music. Like, music is not for them. So, Like, you get, if you get in that niche, it could be very effective. I'm not interested in that, per se. If I will sell these to well drillers or whatever. The weird thing about well drillers, by the way, is that they want a dirty show.
Right, sure.
It's just the guy who's writing the check's wife does not.
Yeah, sure.
And so it's like, these are people who swear all day long, and I am not allowed to swear, and that is weird.
Do you have to, like, pull out your well material? Is there... Is there
actually,
certain...
Yeah, do you have any well jokes?
Reach deep down into that well.
So I did. I did... You know, I don't have a lot of pre-planned stuff, but I riff a little bit on whatever's going on. I did, like, walk around their exhibit hall and look at all their, like, weird drill bits and stuff so I could talk about it. But it's funny. The most effective thing I said all night, which is the dumbest thing I've ever said on stage, one of the gold sponsors with their, like, company logo behind me on stage was 2M, which is, like, a drilling company of some kind.
Right.
And I just mentioned that they're going to be so upset when they find out about the company 3M. And that's not a good joke. Objectively...
No, it's not. It's a great joke.
It's not the best work I've ever done. And like me, and that demolished that room. They were,
I'm sure,
they were so into it.
Because they probably all wear 3M all the time or what. Because 3M, I think, is what?
It's tape.
It's tape.
And
yeah,
they make, they make reflective stuff.
They make the masks like
that. They probably
do. Yeah.
They probably do. But they also have... camouflage 2M baseball or trucker caps on, mm-hmm. and so they're all familiar. Anyway, it was the dumbest joke, and they it was the best thing all night.
I've got a dumber joke. When those companies merge, it'll be 5M.
Well, okay.
Drop.
It's not better. No, it's actually kind of derivative, and it's like 8 years later, you're like, here's the same thing, but worse.
Yeah. No, it's horrible. That's why I said it.
But I had the idea of trying. I did Google before the show started just because I was wondering about it. I was like, how many M's already exist as a company? Does 4M exist? Yes, it does. Does 5M exist? Yes, that's a company.
Shit!
I got up to 10. I could not find 11M, the company, but 10M is a corporation that exists.
You should like.
This is not what I was planning on talking about today.
You should make your LLC of your comedy 11M as like most inside
the most possible
joke.
M,
the most infinity M.
So that's the guy. Like that's the part. It's like they like this the best. This dumb thing I just said.
Yeah.
That's about them. Whereas this piece I've been working on for 3 years of genius comedy does not do anything for him. So it's a weird vibe.
Yeah. So that's, you did 45 there, and is that like? Is that the most minutes that you currently have been working on?
No one should ever do more than 45 minutes, in my opinion.
Uh-huh.
Aziz Ansari was here last week, and he did apparently an hour 50, which is insane.
Wow.
When you're famous enough, people will hang out for it, but nobody really wants to hear anybody talk for more than 45 minutes. The amount of minutes I could do is kind of an interest. Comics talk about how much time they could do as if that's like an important thing.
Like, it's like, what's your bench?
Yeah, they do talk, like, yeah, you'll see this all the time. And then you'll also see, like, on the comics Facebook group, somebody will be like, who can do 15? And comics who just started will chime in. Because, in truth, I could do 7 hours. You would just hate all of it. You would hate 6.5 hours of it, for sure. I could talk as long as there was a time. But, like, how many minutes I would like to do?
Yeah.
45.
Yeah.
45 clean is much harder for me. I can do 45, whatever. But 45 clean is about the max that I can do clean and not, like, cry.
When was the first time that you did 45 and actually felt good about it? Like, oh, that was a good 45 that I just did.
Never.
Well, no, I mean, yeah. I mean, I don't feel... Oh, jeez. Oh. I just broke my thing. I don't feel good about anything I ever do. So that has not happened quite that way. I mean, I've been able to do 45 decent for the last year or two, so not even that long. But what does happen is, I remember, like, the first time I did 30, I felt super good about it, and then, like, I was like, cool, now I'll just do, it took me about 2 years, I got to 30 minutes, now in 2 years, I'll have an hour, it'll be great. And it turns out, 6 months later, I was like, oh, that was not very good. I shouldn't have done any of that. I can't believe I did that for someone who paid for a ticket, so I actually lost minutes.
Yeah.
So I'd, like, write a new joke, and I'd be like, oh, that makes everything else look worse, and then I would write another one and then lose a couple minutes off. Mm-hmm. So, like, the time from 0 to 30 was probably 2 years, and then 30 to 45 or an hour was, like, 6 more years.
Mm. Wow.
To get where I think it's quality. And probably if I look on this in 3 years, I'll be like, I can't believe I said that shit.
Sure.
It was terrible.
But, I mean, that's kind of the point, though, too, because you want to be writing jokes that, you know, are of the current humor, I guess. Not necessarily topical, but, in the style.
I guess I do mostly... No, that's fair. I mean, like, and there were some jokes in my first 30 that were about, like, a pop song on the radio right now. So that wouldn't hold up. But also, my closer was not topical. It was not of the moment. It was just some stupid joke. But like at the time, I thought it was great, and now I'm like, that was really embarrassing. Because you get better. I don't know. It's sort of like, I'm sure your first album. I'm trying to relate to you as musicians.
I would say it's weird for most bands, not for all bands, but for most bands, a lot of bands. Everybody.
How many bands?
I would say
some bands.
76% of bands.
Okay, good.
76% of bands. People just like their first record.
Really?
Only, and that's all they want to hear.
The audience only likes.
The audience only wants to hear that song that you wrote. That and now you're like, I'm writing so much better songs.
Yeah.
Now.
And do you ever think that you might be wrong?
Never, no, I've never. Because if I thought I was wrong, I would stop.
Yeah, yeah, but like, well, I mean, even if you're like, oh, you guys are right, that was my best song, but I can't just do that song again.
Right. Yeah.
Like that would be, you'd still be in kind of a pickle.
Yeah, it sucks. It sucks to be like, I have. It's funny, your 2M joke or whatever. And I think that's hilarious, by the way, because I love
Stupid shit.
He loves dad jokes.
I love dad jokes, and I love stupid shit. But I have a song called Vampire Lake. That's the dumbest song I've ever written. And that's a song that gets requested more than any other song. And when people request it, a little tiny sliver of my soul dies, and then I fucking play it.
What was the, there was that huge... It was like Ed Sheeran piece, Shape of You. It was like one of the biggest songs of last year. And I saw an interview with him where he was like, we were trying to come up with the corniest, stupidest lyrics we could. We were like, these were placeholder lyrics. This was the worst thing we could think of.
Yeah.
And then everyone loves it.
Right.
Yeah.
That's how that works. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe people are wrong.
I think nobody's right. And I think the tension between the people and the artist is right.
Oh,
wow.
Man.
Boom.
That is actually Brian very good for, like, you've been presenting as dumb before this, so that's kind of a fun turn.
That's what I do. And so I lower the expectation. So now you're like, oh, fuck, you're not totally an idiot.
You've had a whole arc today. I'm very impressed.
Thanks, man.
I do like that. I, as a person who does not play music, if I go to your show and you don't play all of my favorite songs, I hate you forever.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah,
it's part of the, I don't care what you like. Process.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But as a comedian, if you're a fan of a comedian and you love, you might be a redneck. If I mean, imagine like Jeff Foxworthy probably fucking has to his dies every time, like a little bit.
He's got a calendar. There's a page a day calendar. That's how many of that joke he's written.
Like 365.
You gonna have a calendar of a joke a day of that format?
Sure.
Yeah. There's no way it's fun for him.
Yeah, but people are leaning in, wanting the next. I fucking give it to me, Jeff.
I need 2019, man. It's already March. Give me a new calendar.
Right.
Yeah. It's a weird tension for sure. Comics are like comedy in general is a little different than like. Like, if you put out a record and it's great, and then someone pays to see your comedy show, and you do that record, people will not enjoy it. Because the surprise is a big part of it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, if you go to see somebody who got famous for one bit, and they don't do that bit, that would also be disappointing. So you have to do some old and some new if you are successful.
Do you have a joke? Do you have a joke right now?
No one's heard of anything that I've done. Not even, I'm assuming that's what you're.
No, I mean, like, do you have a joke either right now or like that comes in a recent memory of a joke that like you personally have kind of lost the like connection with of like this is still funny to me or this is a funny joke. I enjoy performing this joke. That like has turned on you and you don't like it anymore, but it still does really well. That you just have to keep.
No, and the reason is if I don't enjoy it, they will not enjoy it. They can if you're not horny for the joke anymore, the audience can tell and they get off board so quickly. If you are, you can't deliver it angry at them. The same way, like I assume that you could not play a song at them angrily and have it be great. Now, if they knew it, they'd be like, this sounds like my song, but like slow and off key and mean.
Sure.
But like, it's still the song. But if you just played a new song badly or a song you didn't know badly, it wouldn't work.
I think that there's some interesting parallels between comedy and music. But I know that, like, Bob Seger is not into singing Like a Rock.
Right.
At
sure,
all.
For sure.
He's over it, but he has to fucking do it every show no matter what.
Yeah.
And I think that he acts like he's enjoying it, and
does
I think
he,
people
would you
loved,
say he acts, like, stoically? Like,
I'd say he acts like a rock.
Like a rock, yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, they, yeah, that's, we're,
so bringing
we're
you there?
Paddling down the same stream on that one.
Yeah, for sure. And then there's this phase where you just kind of decide to be a nostalgia. You like Weezer is like we are a full time nostalgia band now, and
right.
we will do nostalgia band stuff, and we will put out a cover album this year. Like you can just you can embrace that and turn into the Skid and just make that your life. But they're like I feel like probably Jeff Foxworthy that kind of comedy probably is doing a little bit of like he's doing the same You Might Be a Redneck jokes probably. I mean I don't know. Does he still tour? Probably he does.
Probably he probably still buying he's like he's probably still working on the mortgage of his fourth ranch.
Right yeah he's trying to
shit man
jokes.
For shit, sure man, for he's sure. probably bought his 10th fucking airplane and an island god damn it.
Yeah, I mean, at some point you could just retire and try to spend $1 billion. I mean, right, there's like he's done fine, and probably there's like a factory of young comics writing the calendars for him now. He doesn't even have to do it;
right.
he just gets a stamp on it. But
Foxworthy approved.
Yeah, but it's hard. There's not. It's really difficult for a joke that you don't like to work. There's just almost no way to do it. Also, I like doing well, and that is not true of all comics. A lot of comics are self-loathing in a way that I am like filling a void, so I need that. I need that. So if the joke is working for people, I don't hate it.
Sure.
If it's like I'll deliver a joke, I'll tell you a joke that I think you will like, even if it's not my favorite joke in the world. I'll be like, I am enjoying your noises.
And that's,
I am,
this that's the Vampire Lake for me. Enjoy seeing people have a good time, mm-hmm. and so I'll play Vampire Lake.
Yeah.
I would say, so you said you did 6 shows this last week.
Uh-huh.
And I would say the most interesting thing, like the musician equivalent to that is doing a residency where you play the same place 7 nights in a row.
Yeah.
And I've done, like Al's Den here.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sure you've done comedy there.
Yeah, I did comedy there last night.
No fucking way.
I do comedy there almost every week. I live right, so they do comedy Friday and Saturday night, and I live in the neighborhood, and so anytime I'm feeling saucy, I stop by and do a set.
Awesome.
And so what I like to do is I like to use that one where if I do a corporate show, mm-hmm. I'm like, I'm going to come back and wash the corporate stink off me by bombing in this basement.
Right. I think the most interesting thing about doing Al's Den is you could have 30 people in there every night or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, that's about the average, and I can play the same songs every night in the same order,
mm-hmm.
and it will be wildly different.
Oh yeah!
And it's all about like who is there, and if one person is a fucking linchpin of fun, then everybody's having fun. And how do you like with being a comedian? Yeah. Is it like milking that out of people, and some people just aren't having fun, or like is it this? Does the same thing happen a lot?
Yeah, for sure. You can change, right? Like you could do. Instead of doing the same set list every night and just letting them decide whether it's fun or not, you could be like, oh, you know what? I'm losing the crowd. I'm going to play Vampire Lake.
And that's
I'm going to get them back, and then I'm going to play some weird shit that I want to do, or whatever. So, like, depending on how the audience is, we'll just determine if I do something fun and weird, or if I do something that I'm like, I know this is going to be good because I need to win you over.
Right.
If I'm first, I'm going to start with some solid bangers that I've been doing for a while because I'll get everybody on board, and then I can work on whatever new fun thing I'm trying. If I'm sixth and the crowd is doing like just really into everybody who's gone up, I'm like, I'm going to come up hot and do my new stuff and play around. So, but I can change and you can switch gears in the middle of a set. I can decide, oh, that joke didn't work. Fine. I'll do something fun. Fine. I'll do something good. Or, oh, you wanted something dirtier. I'll pull that out. Or, oh, I went too far for the fucking drillers. I got to give them something much tamer now to win them. But let's go back to the dog jokes or whatever.
Right. Right. Do you like to, play with like, taking it too far with people, like pushing the line?
No, that's not my thing.
That's not
a lot
thing.
Of comics are really into that. That is a fun thing for people. It's not my
if
not my
I
thing.
Was a comedian, I love watching a room go silent through uncomfortableness and then get them back.
Yeah.
Like, that's beautiful.
A lot of people like that, and they're not actually good at that second part.
Right.
That's what happens
a lot. You got to get them back.
Yeah, no, that's not fun. I don't want it to be quiet. I don't want it to be awkward. I'm trying to succeed. I like doing well. I like getting laughs. It was like 5 or 6 years into comedy that this is so embarrassing, but like 5 or 6 years in that I realized when people laugh, that is a joy noise they're making out of their
That's
bodies.
It's so not like crazy.
Because for like the first five, I'm serious, for the first like 5 or 6 years, I was like, I'm winning. I tricked you into doing this.
Right.
You're laughing for me, and it's not. They're right. happy. And that was a big switch for me where I was like, oh, you guys are actually having a good time. That's very rewarding.
Right.
So when people get awkward and quiet, instead of thinking like, they're quiet because I'm manipulating them.
Right.
Then I'm more of the, you guys are having fun. That's good. That's what I'm here for. And then, maybe, if I've earned their trust, then I'll abuse it a little bit. That's how I like to do it. I want to be likable and funny and then poke at them a bit, but I'm not going to just, like, crash it to see if I can bring them back.
Right. It's almost like a self... It's almost like, I'm going to see how good I am at this.
Yeah, I am less show-offy that way. I'm more just like, this is going well, now we can have fun, as opposed to, I'm going to just see what happens.
Right.
So, yeah. Alex, when did you start doing comedy?
I don't remember exactly. 8-9 years ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I did improv since high school.
Oh, right.
And I still periodically pop in and do improv. I'll do improv for money sometimes. Also corporate stuff, but or everyone's all fun. I did a late night improv show yesterday because it was fun before Al's done, so not that late. but I'll pop in every once in a while. But mostly that was like when you're a kid, comedy is paid for by alcoholism, so you have to be. In liquor lounges, basically. That's where comedy happens, stand-up. And so when you're 16, not a lot of chances to go do stand-up. There are very few all-ages stand-up locations. And when there are, they're kind of bad. And even if they are, like there's a bunch of 40-year-olds who paid, they don't want to see what a 17-year-old has to say about the world. It's not cute. So when you're that old, the only comedy that really works is improv. There's a lot of high school improv and college improv. So I did that for a while. And then... I moved here and I started doing improv professionally for a while. And then at some point I was like, okay, well, I really have been meaning to do stand up. That's what I really wanted to do anyway. So I like branched out, and then, slowly that replaced and improv fell off because comedy actually stand up pays better. And is also a lot more satisfying in a lot of ways.
No, that's surprising.
Well, like one of the things about improv is actually that I do think of as being a lot like a band. Man, we're so bonded.
I know.
Well,
we're
I do
really trying for like, that fucking link, man.
I know. It does feel like I'm forcing it.
Such a stretch.
But the thing about improv is you got to be like, I need six people who are all on the same page that we want to do improv, but we have different styles so that we can meld and do interesting things that all have the same schedule so we can meet up and hang out and do this. We have the same level of commitment so that we're all working hard and going the same direction. We're on board. Are we going to travel or are we going to stay here? Like you have to do all of that in a group. You have to have that, which I assume is similar to a band, it's sort of a miracle anybody is ever in a band because it seems like it's always going to be like, well, the bass player had a kid, now we're over or whatever. But
yeah, it's me.
It was you?
Yeah.
You blew it.
Two kids now.
Two kids. Jesus. Yeah. See, your band's over. So then, but like in comedy, you're like, with stand-up, it's just like, what am I doing at 9? I'm going to do a show. That's it. Like,
right.
You don't need anyone else on the same page. No. You can write all day. You can get up whenever there's open mics every night. There's a million open mics. So you decide your own level of commitment, and that is very satisfying.
Yeah.
On the flip side, touring, way less fun because you're by yourself.
You're lonely.
Yeah.
Talk about loneliness.
You said that kind of sexually?
you took it sexually.
You said that like you were flossing your teeth.
I've got the nose ready for your face. It's coming.
Yeah, I'm sure the road is lonely with a band too, but it is just by yourself when you're a stand-up. You're just not... at a certain level, you get to... You might travel with some... like a lot of headliners pick an opening act.
Sure.
Because they like the same sports. It's really like less about funny and more just like, who am I willing to hang out with for the next 3 months?
Right.
Yeah.
But for the kind of work that I'm doing, I'm just popping in. I'm not touring with anybody in particular. It's like, I'm just going to be by myself in this airport and in this rental car and in this hotel room and then in this airport and this rental car and this hotel room. Just on and on by yourself.
It's so crazy to me, the concept. And this is bands too. Like, you'll drive 12 hours and spend $300 in gas or fly across the country to go to this one place for 30 minutes of your thing.
Yeah.
And then fly home. Stupid. And it's crazy the amount of stuff you have to do to
it's not
your
good
little...
It's not good for your brain or for your body or for the environment or no, it really
like
shouldn't happen.
Wasteful as fuck.
Yeah, it's very wasteful. A lot of comedy gigs are more like residencies. It's like I get a weekend, so I'll go to I'll get a club in Indianapolis. It's Thursday, 2 Friday, 2 Saturday, and then I fly back Sunday. So at least it's one flight, I get 5 shows. I'm a mid-level comic, a feature level, so I do like 30 minutes a show. So at least I have a bunch of things for that one trip. Mm-hmm. I do fewer one-offs where I drive any these days. Like when you first start, you do a lot more where it's like there's a casino in Albuquerque and you can drive there.
Right.
And you'll get $100. But you do it because you're not getting any stage time. So I'd like that's your only chance. So there was more of those. And then when you're famous, it's one night because you can't play all, you don't need to play all weekend. You do like the arena or the theater and then you leave. So then you're going back to doing one night gigs, which is weird.
Right.
But I'm in the middle length. You do a lot of like weekends or I'll be in Austin for the whole week, that kind of thing.
Is there a bad region or city in particular? If you don't want to talk shit about a city,
The South is awful and should be set on fire.
That's so funny.
I'm just kidding.
That's so funny because our booking agent, when we were toured a bunch, would never, ever, ever book us below the Mason-Dixon line.
You're just too Portlandy?
No. That he's just like, it's bad for everything. There's no money, and there's nobody likes music there or something.
Interesting.
But there are good cities.
I feel like the genre of music you've played would actually do well in parts of the South. No? No? Even Vampire Lake?
Oh, Vampire Lake. If we play that for an hour anywhere in the South, we're good. Just over and over.
They just come to where you are.
And over again.
I don't know. I mean, I've not spent that much time in the South, honestly. It does not, it's not come up that much for me, so I don't know how bad it is. Like, I've spent some time in Texas, which is not the South, technically. Florida's bad. I don't like Florida, but it hasn't come up that much either.
Is it, like, bad for audience, like, reaction-wise? Like, I feel like the U.S. is so big and strange that, like, if you're a person with a Portland sensibility or even a West Coast sensibility going somewhere else and just... Not even your jokes, but just the way that you are. People automatically are like, eh. Do you run into that at all?
Yeah, for sure there is some of that. I do think the comedy audience is super self-selecting already.
Okay.
The kind of people who are going to comedy. Comedy is a very liberal art form, which is why those niche things.
Jeff Foxworthy.
Like Foxworthy's not a niche, but it is. Exactly. I was going to say, that's what like the Blue Collar Comedy Tour exploded, because so much of entertainment is very liberal.
Right.
That you're like, and now something for the rest of America.
Right.
So that took over. Same thing we're talking with the clean stuff. You get this group that's underserved. But if I go to a comedy club in Texas, it's still a comedy club. It's still like a liberal type environment. They expect a lot of that. It's still the kind of people who go to a cool place.
Sure.
So they're self-selected to an extent. I mean, Texas is a little weirder. I don't know. I did a joke about being a vegetarian for a while, and in Houston, someone just threw chicken at me. She just had chicken fingers, and she threw a chicken finger at me, and I thought she was like mad at me for being a vegetarian. She was like, "No, I just thought you were hungry."
That's just how we eat here.
I was just trying to be sweet. Yeah, I guess.
Open up.
Yeah, like she thought I was just gonna be like, "Well, I was a vegetarian until now. That looks good, and it's sitting on the floor now because you threw it."
Not only are you eating meat, you're wasting meat.
Yeah.
So fuck you, double.
That is shitty. I didn't even think of that part. But like, so like, that's not. It's not. Great. It's still going to be a little different.
You're flinging lentils at her with your spoon from the stage.
These are like fancy black beans. You'll love them.
Hey, man, that's uncool.
I can't believe we came back to lentils.
Yeah, we fucking...
You said you would.
You can promise me. I wrote it down.
The deepest pin and we fucking pulled it out.
I mean, there's definitely some difference. Like, my bit right now that I'm the most excited about that I've been working for the last year, that was like over half of my set at the contest last year when I won Portland's Funniest Person, like, this is my, like, my bit that I really love, is about consent. And that joke is different in Reno than it is here.
Totally.
But, so they won't clap at the
there's no consent in Reno on the city.
It's Biggles Little City. You're close. But they, like, that joke, I probably wouldn't do that joke in Houston. I don't know. It would be scarier for me. So I would, but maybe they'd go with it. I don't know. In other places I've done it, I did it in Montana, and they, like, they don't clap at the first part, but they do sort of admire the structure, I guess, seem like, all right, you've earned it. We're going to clap for it. We're going to laugh a little bit. But like, it's not like in Portland where it brought the house down. But then I did some shows opening up for Rhea Butcher, who is a really cool, progressive lesbian comic. She's amazing. They are amazing. Sorry, they're amazing. And their crowd didn't give a shit. They were like, yeah, this is like so basic. This is such boring liberalism. Like, you're nowhere near where we are.
Yeah.
Good for you. A guy has noticed consent is important. Great. Like, they just like yawned at me.
Eat your Dave's Killer Bread and get the fuck out of
here. Yeah. Well, it was like, so it turns out there is like sort of a sweet spot if you're trying to teach something where you have to get people who are like willing to learn, but also not all the way there already.
I like the moment in comedy where it's like we don't want to like this but okay, we like it. Even if they're not laughing the hardest, it's like you really overcame a hurdle.
Yeah, begrudgingly. Yeah, but you've also told me you like when they are mad at you.
I love that.
You like when they play hard to get.
I love that test.
Yeah.
He loves it.
What?
I would probably not challenge most audiences because I mean as I'm getting better, I'm more comfortable with that kind. Like, I'm going to get you on board with this joke even if you don't like it. And one of the things that helped is not apologize. Like, when I was first early on, I'd be like, all right, you guys aren't going to go with me on this, but check it out. Let me do this joke. And they would like, oh, well, you already hate it. Like, I already feel bad.
Right.
Now I could just be like, I'm going to ram this down your throat and you'll tolerate it.
Right.
It's about consent.
That's good.
So when was the moment where, like, you actually felt like you could take, like, because you developed as a comic in Portland, right, primarily? Mm-hmm.
Exclusive. So well, when, I mean, touring, but like mostly here.
Yeah. But so like, when was there a moment? We've got the door open in the trailer. That was Garwin, ladies and gentlemen. That was Garwin.
It's a clown car
from the 30s.
Yep. When was the moment when you were kind of like, I think I can take this out of Portland? Like, was it a thought that you had, like, oh, I should take this out of Portland, or was it like more like happenstance? Somebody called you like, hey, I'm doing a show in LA, you should come down for it.
Well, LA is actually a very special thing. I feel like at first when I was doing like shitty casino gigs and bad touring, it was more like, touring is what worked. That means you're successful. That's what I want to do. So as soon as I get an opportunity where somebody will let me do a gig somewhere, I will do that gig. And actually the first ever touring gig I did, which was terrible, and was in Montana, and it was like 9-hour drives for $100. But
where in Montana was it?
It was Missoula, which is like a cool college town, except when I was there. And then we were there in the summer. And then Butte, which is just a
mining town.
Yeah, well, it's really an open pit natural disaster.
Yeah. And so your 2M jokes work there.
They probably would have. I wish I'd thought of it back then. No, that was like, I asked somebody in the crowd in Butte what their, they was like, what do you do for a living? And the first time I ever on tour, and I was like doing a little crowd work, and the first job was a farrier.
What is a farrier?
My thought exactly. It's a person who shods horses. It's a horseshoer. And I had never heard of that. And I was like, all right, fucking Montana, I give up. I don't know anything about jobs here. This is a different world. But that gig, I got that gig because I had been rejected for something else and it pissed me off. And so I was like, I met a guy, I'll hit him up and I'll try to get work from him. So it was like, it was a lot of pettiness motivated from my early touring. So it wasn't like, I'm ready to take it on the road. It was like, I'd need something good to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
LA was crazy. The first time I did comedy in LA, I was like, it was, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago. So still kind of early on. And I like, I'd gotten a recommendation. I worked with someone here, and he was like, I can get you into the Comedy Store. Just say my name, and they'll put you up. And I had, like, so I was, like, driving to the Comedy Store. It was, like, a famous old comedy club. You've heard of it, owned by Pauly Shore's mom for a long time. But anyway, I was, like, driving there, and when you drive along Sunset Boulevard, you see all these billboards that are for TV shows to win Emmys. So they're, like, it's not like, hey, you should check out Scrubs. It's, like, Scrubs for your consideration. And what they mean is, if you're an Emmy voter, you should vote for us to get an Emmy for that.
And that's what they put on billboards.
That's
there.
What I'm saying. I was like, it was so intimidating. It was like, this much money to have this billboard on this prime piece of real estate that is for like 12 people to see. I was so intimidated by that level, which is stupid, but I was just like, those billboards, I was like, oh my God, this is such an intense industry city. And when I got there, the guy who was in charge of the club was like yelling at a comedian as I walked up. He had like asked to go up early, and the guy was chewing him out. And I was just like just shaking as I walked up to him, and then I was like, hey, Cap says that I could do a set, and he entirely changed, because Cap, John Caparillo, at the time was a very cool comic at the Store, and he was like, oh, you're Cap's guy, he said you'd be coming, and then he treated me like a king for the rest of the evening, and my set there went great, because they're just, and then once I did jokes, like, I was so scared And then I got up on stage and I tell my first joke and they laughed and I was like, oh, you're just people listening to jokes. It's the same. You're just a normal audience. And it went fine. But that, so the experience around the whole thing was super intense. Mm-hmm. But then the comedy audience was mostly just an audience. They're just like, we would like jokes. In fact, in LA, they're mostly tourists too. So they're like, we've never even seen real comedy. This is exciting for us too.
Yeah, totally.
Today's podcast is brought to you by 5M Engineering Worksite Products. When you're trying to get the job done right, 5M's got your back. Whether you're retrofitting a DLX Cascade torque drain or just simply driving down some R13s to the drill area for use with the ball spline actuator, 5M's got your back. 5M has anything you need to get her done. Velocity joints, dynamic fusible flanges, gear ratio Hobson centrifuges, induction nozzles, plasticity pumps, kinetic rail switches, and even thermodynamic suspension springs. 5M's got your back. 5M. Don't get caught servicing an R100 rated at 400 SQLs with an incompatible rotational coupling binder again. 5M Engineering Worksite Products. Now you're doing it.
Is there a kind of person that owns a comedy club?
Is that like a fucking demographic?
Oh, man.
And if that is interesting to you, please feel free to share.
Nope. Okay. All different people. Unique individuals, nothing the same.
Okay.
There is a kind of thing that happens where, like, comedians become club owners.
Oh.
And that's super creepy because there's, like... There used to be a guy who owned a comedy club in Denver. Well, he didn't... I mean, he, like, booked it and co-owned it, but he would, like... trade bookings. He'd be like, right. If you let me work in your club, I have a club I can offer you work in. And that is so gross.
Yeah.
And so like bad for
nepotism.
The art. Yeah. And he was bad. So it was like the kind of person who would do that is bad. And so it's really, it just makes for bad. I can't imagine why I went out of business. There are like small clubs, like single clubs where they're not part of a bigger chain.
Like conglomerate.
Yeah. They tend to be a real weird group of people.
Right.
One thing that happens is that they are gatekeepers, even in a small world, even a small town. Whatever you are, you're still the club. Mm-hmm. And so people never tell you that you're not interesting or funny. Mm-hmm. So you just get this like constant obsequious, like just people kissing your ass. So that you just, they become broken. And so they'll walk in and just start telling a story that is not interesting. And they'll talk for 20 minutes and then they'll just walk away. And you're like, why were you even here? I don't care about that story. But no one has ever told them to stop because everyone wants their money.
Right.
So sure.
Totally.
It's a real weird kind of broken person.
It's a professional time waster / necessary evil.
Well, for sure, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But the kind of mental energy of somebody who's always getting their ass kicked is different. this is true of a lot of people in the industry. It's just like every time you meet a comic, they are telling you how cool you are, whether or not you're cool.
Right.
And I would do the same thing. Like, I'd work in a shitty club, and the guy would come in and be like, hey, so are you having a good weekend? I'm like, amazing, best club I've ever been to, because I also want work from you.
Yeah.
And so they just, it's like a... I don't know, like being a king or whatever, where you only talk to the people around you and they all tell you that you're great. Did you see The Favorite?
Yeah.
No. The Favorite? Oh, man. It's like that. It's like everyone around you is having duck races and telling you the war's going great.
Okay.
And you eat cake until you throw up and then you keep eating cake. Really fun movie. But anyway, that's the feeling that they have, is they're just like, there's just this like, I'm important. Everyone has to talk this way to me. No, like, everyone thinks I'm amazing. I don't know why. That's so great. I didn't realize I was describing punishers, which is your thing. That's our thing. Yeah, these are club owners. They're all punishers.
Interesting. It's for us, it's mostly fans with no boundaries. It's like doctors without borders, but fans
without boundaries.
We brought chips just so you'd feel at home, because there's usually a bowl of chips.
There's
so
a bag of chips
unopened chips.
Yeah.
And I was like,
it's
that's
out of your reach. But
that's going to be great for radio.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Everybody loves to listen to
crunching.
Wait, okay, but you've seen Fight Club.
Totally.
Early on Fight Club, when Edward Norton calls Brad Pitt is eating potato chips into the phone, and it's cool.
It's totally cool.
It's the coolest sound.
Is that what
this
cool
is? What
do?
We would just be Brad Pitt the whole time.
Four Brad Pitts.
Anytime that you like. Were in a place that either like made you feel unsafe or like really gross?
Other than this place right here, right now.
I feel very safe, you guys. This is a lovely trailer, and I don't think the trailer will handle you guys talking this badly about it while you're inside it.
Yeah, those pictures of like...
It does fall... It does have things that fall off the wall
and
quite often.
There's pictures of Ira Grass and Terry Grosch on the walls.
That's cute. And this so is like, so lovely.
It's not bad. Mm-hmm.
And the chips are far away, but other than that, it's a nice setup.
I put them there on purpose to like make attention around the tits. So, but man, I'm hungry. I wish I could reach those chips.
I wasn't hungry until you said it. Now
you guys want some chips? I can eat some chips.
That'd be fucking great, man.
Yeah, Ray's gonna bring the chips over.
Ray, if you could just take a break and grab me some chips,
that would be great. One thing I like to do.
Can you think of anything?
Oh, sorry.
Unsafe and gross.
Unsafe or gross. Either one. Like a.
here we go.
Like,
yeah, those are.
I mean, if it isn't the case, I understand. I just that's a thing that comes up with. I feel like with musicians all the time. There's either like something that happens at a venue that makes them feel really gross, or unsafe, or the flip side of it is that they actually are the ones who make that situation happen for themselves. That's actually more often than not.
Do you guys have condos? Do you get a condo ever? Like a theater has a condo? You know what I'm talking about?
In Europe, they do that.
In Europe, we do like band apartments.
Interesting, band apartments. Yeah. So the comedy condo is largely dying out as a thing, but it used to be every club would have a place because it was cheaper than having a hotel every week for the
right.
You'd have four nights of putting somebody up in a nice hotel for that price four times a month. You could just rent an apartment nearby.
And have it be shitty and full of crabs.
Yeah, exactly. You'd have it be super gross. I mean, you could do it, right? Like, there's one, like Boise, the club there, actually has a really nice place because what they do is it's for the club comedians Thursday through Saturday, then or Thursday through Sunday, and then on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, they just have Airbnb.
Totally.
So they pay someone to clean it. It's a nice condition. It pays for itself, and then you get a nice place to stay.
This is a free podcast, and that is free advice about how to do a business.
If you run a club, there. I think you could, with a little bit of work, you could do that. But then the problem is the comics are gross, and they're going to make it terrible.
Mm-hmm.
From my perspective, though, I've played in a bunch of places with condos that are just horrifying.
Right.
The condo in Colorado Springs was four people who were AWOL from the military.
Talk
about
that
exclusively.
A
little bit. well, I want someone else to talk so I can eat this chip in my hand, but I'll get there.
Eat the chip through the story. This is our nitrous.
Please don't do that. This is the podcast where you eat snacks and talk.
The worst idea. Welcome back to Tour Punisher, the podcast where you eat chips and talk.
This is the ASMR episode of Tour Punisher.
I'm this episode tingling. Of Tour Punisher is brought to you by what kind of chips are you? These are incredible.
Yeah.
No, they're amazing.
Solid El Sabroso
Salsita.
Oh my god.
Back fucking wow.
Yeah. Good.
I took Spanish.
They're
that's
good.
That's Sabroso.
I took Spanish for 6 years.
Yeah, tomato and avocado on them. It's
terrible
delicious.
At it.
So
covered in chicken fingers.
Yeah, the condo in Colorado Springs had a sign by the bathtub with like a line in the bathtub. It was like, do not fill over this amount. The tub will fall through the floor.
Oh.
That was pretty solid.
I like how 1 millimeter above, it's totally
they figured
safe.
Out, they knew the amount that the floor
that's
could
what I'm
handle.
No, like that has happened before. They knew exactly how much it could
no
handle.
No matter how fat the comedian is that's going to go in this tub, because they could be like 400 pounds.
I never thought of that. That's such a good point.
I was like, what the fuck? How could that be a thing? And then,
oh, man.
It was definitely the 400-pound comedian that made it go through the floor, not the back.
Yeah, I never even thought of that, but that line is so unrelated because it depends on the person.
It should be like, if you weigh this much, the line is like 2 inches from the bottom.
Maybe it meant that the water should only be that high with you in it.
Okay.
Like your displacement was accounted for in the line.
Like you're a rice cooker, and you put the line with the...
Yes, like I'm a rice cooker. You know what I mean.
Yeah. It's a vegetarian joke.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I like them.
Lentils and a rice. Never mind.
Nice. I was at a club. There was a condo in San Antonio where It was the first time I'd ever watched drug deals like The Wire happen, where like someone walks up, somebody whistles, kid runs around the corner, hands you the thing, you go to the other place and give money. And we were like on the 12th floor.
What drugs were you buying?
We were on the 12th floor, and I just watched.
Hey!
No good joke for that. I don't even do nitrous when I'm paid for it. So.
Right, you're like,
I was not buying any drugs, but I from the 12th floor, I would just watch this drug deal business happening, and it was just like someone would walk over here with their hands in their pockets, they'd give it a couple of dollars, and he'd be like, go around the corner, and you'd watch them go around the corner, and then every once in a while somebody would whistle, and then they'd all disappear, and a cop would drive by, and then they would all come back. That was terrifying. And then San Antonio won a playoff game in the NBA. Mm-hmm. And everyone just went outside and shot guns in the air while I was trying to sleep. In a city. We were not in the country. I was downtown in San Antonio.
I mean, oh my God. You're in the country and the city in San Antonio, Texas. It covers
and yet,
both bases.
The people at the club were very nice. I did very well there. But the around them was terrifying.
Yeah. It's the most.
So I felt unsafe and dirty there. It was unclean.
Yeah.
As somebody who
something happened,
as somebody who doesn't drink or do drugs, do you ever feel like a weird thing where like everybody else is like you know, like a million comedians are doing blow, and you're like, okay, like it makes you uncomfortable, like I am on tour when everybody's doing. No, I'm just
when you're doing all the blow and everybody's like, Ryan, Jesus Christ.
You have a family?
You have a family. They're like trying to, and I'm like, fuck it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I don't usually feel like, mostly just feels like the cool kids are hanging out without me and I'm going to call my wife and then go to bed early.
Right.
The club owner in Colorado Springs offered me mushrooms before a show, which is insane.
I think that'd be really fun, but
it seems like maybe he did not care about the quality of that show.
Or he cared extra.
I mean, it was gonna be, he didn't ask, hey, do you do mushrooms a lot? Could you handle this? It was like, would you like your first mushroom experience to be right before you perform for 30 people in a small conservative town?
It might have been the greatest set you've ever played. There's a pitcher in the 70s in baseball that pitched a perfect game
on acid.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. So I think you got it in there somewhere.
Yeah, but that. But how many pitchers did acid and then like threw two pitches the wrong direction and left? We don't know.
Right.
That statistic does not take into consideration.
I don't make the documentary about that guy.
You never do.
Yeah. Well, I think you could be the one.
Did you? What was like the shittiest time? Like the time
the
that you came.
Salmon Derby.
Oh yeah.
For real?
What was your question?
For real?
I think we've played a show called Salmon Derby.
We played fucking Salmon Jam. Salmon.
Yeah, we played Salmon Jam.
We played Salmon Jam and Salmon Fest.
Well,
we've done two salmons.
This is something that's probably like good and bad about being music is that you can be in the background and have the event continue.
Yeah.
Comedy cannot be. No one is paying attention.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Scaboose Salmon Derby was a bunch of comics went down to Scaboose during the Salmon Derby, which is where they had caught all the salmon because of salmon season, and they just like cooked them all whole and put them on tables, and so you just walk up and fork some salmon off it. It's the craziest thing. We were performing in the corner. I like it, for what it's worth.
This is working for me, this chip sound.
Yeah. The people at home are also...
I'm part of this now.
They're divided. You are?
That was a good
one,
man.
That was a really good chip sound.
He's the engineer.
If you put a chip that's like naturally... Some are naturally flat, some are naturally folded over... Yeah. A folded one with a tube out into the microphone will give it its fucking trumpeting
resonance.
Crunch.
Yeah.
Amazing. Anyway, go on about Scaboose.
The Salmon Derby, it was not me on stage. It's my friend Whit. But Whit was on stage. Whitney was on stage. And during their set, the guy who had booked us just walked up straight onto stage and just went, you don't have to finish.
Oh.
In the middle, like, you don't have to do this.
Anytime you're told that, things aren't going well.
It's not great. I mean, just no one was listening. It wasn't like, so it's not like you're bombing. It's just, you're just talking to it. You were talking to the backs of heads who are eating salmon, and it sucks, but it's not like, well, you did a bad job. It just, it feels terrible, but it's not failure. It's a weird kind of, a weird vibe for that.
I could agree. That's a thing.
But just having somebody say, like, you don't have to do this.
You don't
and
have
then
to
they just
finish.
Paid us and we got to leave. It was nice.
That's great.
I actually, the first show I ever ran, did you come to my Applebee's show?
No.
You did. The first show I ever ran, early in my comedy, I was like months into
it
my
was
comedy
the Applebee's
career.
Near Lloyd Center, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Applebee's Home
is
of Comedy.
Is there any other? Come on, guys.
This
Am
is
I
the
right?
best one. There was a time where there were more Applebee's paying comedians in the city than clubs.
That's so awesome.
What happened was, like right after I started comedy, Applebee's decided to become a real neighborhood bar. So what they did was they got like this memo from corporate. They sent it to every bar that was like, you have to be a neighborhood bar now. So you have to have either a game night or a comedy night or a music night or an open mic. Mm-hmm. Whatever. You have to do trivia. You have to do neighborhood bar shit. Mm-hmm. And so all of the managers of all the Applebee's panicked the same day and were like, how do we get bar entertainment? And a guy I knew, not a friend, a guy I knew, was a regular drinker at the Applebee's bar by Lloyd Center.
Oh, God.
And so when they were like, the bartender was complaining about this, he was like, I know someone who does comedy. He might have said a friend. We were not. He's like, I know someone who does comedy. And so I got a call from Applebee's.
Corporate?
I was from the manager, but it was like, it said like the
Frederick Appleby. Like,
yeah.
With his monocle.
Yeah. Yeah, Mr. Apple called and he was like, could you do a show at this Applebee's every Monday night? And they paid well. Like, even now, it was like a decent, for what I'm doing now, I'd be like, this is not terrible money. And what happened was, the first week, you guys came, because you were, I posted on Facebook and everyone was like, comedy at Applebee's? I'm fucking there.
Yeah.
I can't wait to try one of those wonton tacos. And
wontons.
So they so I packed it. It was full of all these people. Mm-hmm. And then so the manager was like, oh, comedy is just free money. That was the best, like one of their best nights.
And you're the greatest
we
comic.
Sold,
we're the
best. So many apple teenies.
Yeah, they were doing great. And he even told us, he was like, look, you don't have to be clean. Because we make so much more money on the bar than from the restaurant part. We don't care if you scare away the customers from the restaurant as long as you're bringing people into the bar. So the first night we packed the bar with like drinkers too. Like like a casual family restaurant.
And all
people.
Your pedophile humor just.
We were brand new. Like seriously, I was like 6 months in, so it wasn't pedophile humor, but it was definitely offensive. Like it was one of the only shows I've ever done where I had a genuine heckler where somebody just yelled, you suck, while I was telling a joke.
Was it Noah?
What they did was they put sheets behind us. They just hung sheets from the wall to cordon off the restaurant, which is not soundproof. So there was somebody sitting directly behind me eating with his family.
And you're like,
and I'm telling some terrible sex joke. And he just goes, could you stop? You suck. And he was 100% right.
You know what? You and your family sucks.
I'd be like, yeah, I'm sorry. Because it wasn't even like, if you come to a comedy club and then you heckle, it's kind of weird. You're being a real dick.
Yeah.
This guy was just eating dinner and a comedy show formed next to him.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was awful for them. So the first night was great. And we were the best, and they were excited about us forever. And then the second night, no one came. Obviously. Yeah. No one ever came.
You guys want to go hear the same material for a second night in a row?
At Applebee's?
Another four apple teenies?
Yeah, they're like 12 bucks. So the second, it was the second week, second night, but we no one came, and except for the people who were in the restaurant, who were still offended.
Uh-huh.
And so the bartender was like, I don't know about this show anymore. And then the third week, no one came. And they hated it, but we had signed like an 8-week contract for it.
Oh my God.
So he was like, it has to be clean. I have to get control over all the performers. You can only do this much time, which is not something we could do. And so we just goofed off. We're like, he would just stare at us. He would just hate us the whole week. We're like, look, we're just going to run out this contract.
Yeah.
But because we cannot do any of the things you want. We can't be good. I didn't know any good comedy. I just started. So I was like, you're my dumb friends who just started also. So we just did an open mic in Applebee's for 6 more weeks of everyone in the building hating us. Servers liked it. I mean, like, the servers were like, this is the best night that we've had in here. This is way fun and silly.
Our manager looks so pissed. This is amazing.
<it's great.
laughs>
it tells you something when the people who work at the place love you.
Yeah.
Like, it tells you you're not doing the wrong thing.
Yeah, there's something there. You're doing the right thing in the wrong place, maybe.
Yes. Yes.
Well, and if you do it in comedy clubs, if the staff likes you, it's great, because they have this funny tendency of... becoming managers later and booking people.
Right.
So having the servers like you was very helpful in the long run.
Yeah.
But at Applebee's, that has not really come in handy. At some point, I'm going to run into somebody who's going to be like, oh man, I've been a fan of yours since I was a server at Applebee's, and it's going to be so rewarding.
Yeah. Have you had intense fan experiences where people are too much? Are you exposed to fans?
Man, I have no fans. No, what do you? You don't get fans this way, that much at this level. Like, I get recognized on the street from time to time.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like in public.
But they're never like,
oh, Alex Falcone. Oh my
god,
you're
the best. I've loved you forever. But people do like, can you? Hey, haven't I seen you at a comedy show? That's what
can you do that joke for me again right now? Right now, like
it's
right.
Not even it's
right here.
It's always more like, hey, remind me your name. I think I saw you at Helium last year.
Yeah,
right.
Weren't you on Portlandia?
Yeah, I have had Portlandia's. Well, so the weird thing is, like, all the people at my Trader Joe's know me. Like one of the Trader Joe's people recognized me from Portlandia, which is weird because I've done a bunch of Portlandias, but never as like an important character.
Right.
Like it's recognizing someone who goes to your Trader Joe's and being like, hey, weren't you the guy who stood near Fred during that fight scene? Like, it's not
right.
It was weird, but so then like they just told each other, and so now just everybody's like, oh, they're kind of, so some of them have come see me, and so that's the only place where I feel like a little bit like trapped,
because
I'm like,
yeah,
I need to buy all of this food, and
I'm
you're gonna just
to
keep
be
booping. Yeah, have I have you, to be on at Trader Joe's. It's weird.
Have you not gone to that Trader Joe's because you didn't feel like it, like dealing with
it's
it?
The closest Trader Joe's. I have to. I have duck. I hope none of my fans at Trader
that's
Joe's.
That's where you get all your lentils too, right? So
I mentioned Trader Joe's twice on this podcast.
You're shitting on your only people, man.
No, I know. I have seen somebody down on one aisle and been like, I don't really feel like
yeah,
I'm that person,
yeah,
and I'll
yeah.
rush around and I'm like, I'll come back for pasta later, and
right.
then I'll go do fruit or something first. I will avoid them that way. But, like, I don't have a lot of, like, fans.
Yeah.
It's not a thing that comes up very often at this level. I do a podcast, and, like, some people, podcast fans, as I'm sure you learned from season one of your show, are more intense fans than any other kind of fans of anything that I've found. Certainly more than comedy. I mean, sure, music fans can get really intense, too, because you're like, you were there for me during this intense time. Comics are not, especially live, if I'm mostly just live and I've not done a lot of recorded stuff. I was never there for anybody during a dark time.
Because
you came to a club. You were hanging out. Maybe you were having a bad day.
Yeah.
But I didn't, like, help you through. Whereas podcast people write in all the time and be like,
What's your podcast about?
I do a podcast called Read and Weep that's about movies.
Oh, yeah, I know.
And I've been doing this for 10 years.
Wow.
I've been doing it longer than I've been doing stand-up. And it's been about a lot of things over the years. It started about books, which hence the name, and then it became more about movies, and we've kind of tried a bunch of different genres of what we want to talk about. We recently decided that the beginning of 2019 was season two. So we did 470 episodes in season one.
That's so awesome.
And then we started season two. We just got picked up. It's great. Maybe there'll be a season three in 10 more years. But so what we're talking about right now, we've done a lot of recently, is about having guests talk about movies that meant a lot to them as children, and then we watch them and see if they held up. So season two is about, right now, is about does it hold up. But mostly the thing that we like doing overall is we like movies that give us an excuse to talk to you about you. So movies that have biographical things to it, something that meant something, or experiments. People will pay us to watch a movie that they really like and see what it was. So that's our sponsors and stuff. Anyway, so do this podcast about movies. I'm doing it forever. And so people write in and be like, look, I started listening to you in college. I went to this long breakup and you guys were there. And we weren't. But like it was like the internet's there, I guess.
Right.
But like those people. And so every once in a while, somebody like that will come to a show and be like, oh, I've been listening to your podcast since I was in, and this, all this. And this is what it meant to me. And that is like the closest. But they're just sweet. Podcast fans are sweet, awkward people. No,
right.
The podcast fans are not aggressive. The only thing that they're aggressive about, and I use that word probably wrongly, but podcast people will be like, man, do you remember that riff you had about lentils in episode 97?
yeah
like, nope,
it's like the
I definitely don't. But anyway, so the podcast people will like have these like great memories of a riff you did 5 years
right,
ago,
right.
Yeah,
because it like really resonated with them. Or like, everyone in our house is always saying blah blah blah, like, I that just came out and
that's
was gone
fine.
The second I said it. But that's where fans kind of happen,
right?
Yeah. People are very nice, but like, yeah, it's mostly just people like recognize me a little bit, and it's not like people are like, no one's following my career. I don't know.
Do you have like, what was the last like really bad heckling situation? Like, do you have a heckle story of like, oh my god, I could barely perform because of this heckler kind of thing?
Let me tell you my heckling thing. Heckling is mostly a myth.
for real. That Applebee's guy, it's one of two times someone's ever yelled, "You suck," and the other one was because I told them I went to a college that they lived in that town, and they hated college kids from that town. Heckling is almost entirely a myth. It's crazy, because like heckling took on this life the last couple of years in the general public as a major problem in comedy, which it never has been. But it's created this very strange atmosphere about it, where like Jamie Kennedy made a movie a couple years ago called Heckler. I don't know if you guys saw it, which is basically a movie about how Jamie Kennedy sucks, but he it's like he like somebody will heckle him at a show and he'll like follow them home. It's really terrible.
Wow.
But every time he's getting heckled, it's like he's doing a college and he says a bunch of racist shit. Sure. And then someone in the crowd is like, "That's kind of racist." And he's like, "How dare you heckle me? How dare you come to my show and heckle me?" And that's not what was happening. You just said a racist thing. And they respond like people in the audience sometimes talk, and like, but comics act like if you talk during my show, you're ruining art. And that is
right.
Absolutely insane. Like I think Jimmy Kennedy said during the one part, he's like, you would never go to a symphony and like heckle the conductor. Yeah. But at no point during a symphony does the conductor turn around and go, "Do you have cats? Who has cats? Hey, what's your job?" Like, if you talk to people, you teach them that they can respond to you. That's the what you've set up. So you don't get to be a dickhole about people talking if you talk to them.
Especially if we talk about cats.
We have a communicative art form where you ask questions and expect answers. But then later when they talk, also, we have an industry that is entirely funded by alcoholism. Specifically, in comedy clubs, you have a two-item minimum in most clubs. So you are required to buy drinks, even if you started the night somewhere else and have been drinking for a while. So you get people who are, obviously, Helium would never do this because they're the best, but everybody else is over-serving, is over-serving all the time in comedy clubs. It's a huge problem. So people are drunk, and then by law, they have been drinking by your requirement, and then you're going to look them in the face and ask them a question, and then 10 minutes later be upset that they talked to you in a different situation, that they couldn't tell the difference between the two of those. It is absolutely our fucking faults. If you talk to me during a show, it is because I have taught you that that is okay. So if somebody talks during a show, I can keep that from happening anymore by being like, "Hey, thanks," and then not talking to them. That's great. Then they will not continue to talk. In a good club, if you talk, they will throw you out all the time. So no one's like, no, but people don't come to a show to tell you that you suck.
Right.
Now, what does happen is people talk, and sometimes it is distracting, but what they are almost always saying is something that they think is helpful. So, which I think is insane to call that heckling. So what I think is people don't heckle. What they do is they get real drunk, and then you mention unicorns, and then a lady goes, "I have a unicorn tattoo." Now, that was not helpful, but if this is a drunk lady who's free associating because you looked at her and mentioned a thing she has a tattoo of. And if you are mad at her for that, you are the asshole.
Yeah.
Now, you don't have to make the show about her, so you can be like, cool, and they ignore her, and then she will not continue to talk, or if she does, she will be asked to leave, or people around her will shush her. It's not a big deal. But she's not heckling you. She is a drunk person responding to stimuli that you are. And you are you make it, like, stand-up is, as an art form, we have decided to pretend that we are being conversational even when we're not. So, like, it's precisely written and memorized, but we act like we're just coming up at the top of our heads. And then you expect the drunk people not to talk back. It's fucking stupid. So people don't really heckle much at all. People do talk, but they're trying to help, and they're drunk.
I would say if my whole thing
is my thing that I just came up with just now, and I've never talked about before.
That's great. It was really
Wow, it was really well thought out.
For as dumb as
you
present,
must talk for a living. So Alex, we're about out of time. Okay. Is there anything
this
that you
this reverts to a brothel at 9 p.m.?
Yeah, exactly.
We gotta have this trailer, you guys.
Or what was it? What was it? Actually, you don't have to keep going.
Yeah, yeah. You don't have to finish.
We're good. Is there anything you want to plug? We don't know exactly when our release date of this episode will be yet, but is there anything coming up?
Yeah, I mean, the podcast is what you should listen to. If you're interested in movies in any way, or if you're interested in me, read it and weep.
Read it and weep.
Yeah, I'm talking to comedians about movies and what they mean to people. I'm really excited about season two, and does it hold up? We've done some really fun stuff. Cool. We did an episode, which is mostly about movies. We also did a couple episodes that are kind of side things from our childhood. We did a candy episode where everyone requested three candies from their childhood, and we had a lot of ASMR style eating on the microphone.
Nice.
like this. And then we figured out what candies held up from our childhood. For example, Warheads, still kind of fucked up.
Yeah,
oh, they're still gnarly.
Are they still hard to eat? Yeah, I bet. Mm-hmm. No spoilers. No spoilers. Not,
yeah. So yeah, that's where you should check me out.
Okay, great. Yeah. And then also too, like anytime you see that he might be on a stand-up bill, I recommend you buy the ticket, enter the club.
Mostly they're free because we're bad at money.
Yeah.
If you're in Portland, it's free all the time. Come find me.
All right, Ryan, will you take us out?
Have a good fucking week.
Jesus Christ.
Thanks everybody for listening to Tour Punisher. It was great having you on the program. This episode was produced by myself, Noah Dunham, Ryan Soli, and Ray Rude. It was edited and sound engineered and composed, or sound composed, or music composed, what have you, by Mr. Ray Rude.
Yeah, and we want to thank our special guest today, Mr. Alex Falcone. You can find more information about him and dates and whatnot at alexfalcone.ninja. Also check out his podcast. It's called Read It and Weep. A couple more thanks is we wanted to say thanks to Gilgamesh Brewing for keeping us beard. And we wanted to say thanks to Misplaced Screen Printing for supporting the show. And also to all of you listeners that we love. And thanks for supporting us. It's growing slowly. We like it. If you want to help us out, you can shout us out on Instagram or Facebook. We're at Tour Punisher. Or you can hit us up via email, which is tourpunisher@gmail.com. So see you in 2 weeks and have a good week.